Before I dive in, I wanted to give an update on our building. I know people have been wondering, I'm sure, what the results of our little Pew survey were as to when and how we would go about doing the project in light of rate hikes and such. And the result was that not a huge overwhelming majority, but definitely a majority of folks were in favor of moving forward. And a good number of you indicated in your survey that you would be willing to give more. And so just as a heads up, thank you for doing that. We would like to kind of formalize that. We're going to be mailing out some update pledge cards to you that gave that indication. And I want to thank everybody for their generosity, both in the first phase as well as this kind of follow-up pledge period. And so those are going to be mailed to you by the end of this month. And according to what we got in the survey, we're pretty confident that we're going to be over the 80% that is required by the diocese to move forward with the project. So contingent upon their approval, which I think they will probably approve, we will be initiating a contract and moving forward with the project as soon as we can. So as soon as we can get that confirmation from the diocese and signatures from the bishop, then we'll be moving forward on that. I'm very excited about it. Obviously, any building project is its own set of labors, right, and own set of inconveniences. But certainly, I think it's for a purpose, and we'll have a building that will be, will serve many generations here in learning the faith and passing on the faith. So thank you very much again. Today, all we have to do to call to mind this story from our gospel is so ingrained in us that all we have to do is mention two names, Martha and Mary. And instantly, everybody is transported to this scene that we hear today. And of course, being human beings, we like to put things in little categories and boxes so we can feel like we have it all figured out, right? And so how many of us have heard, a homily at one time or another? Are you a Martha or are you a Mary? It's the wrong question, really, because the answer to that question really ought to be both, right? We should be both in some sense, right? I think the operative question, though, really for each of us in pondering this scene is, why do we do what we do? We should constantly return to that question in our actions in the world, in what we do, maybe even to the level of what our profession is or what our vocation is, but why are we doing it? For whom are we doing it? Are we doing it for our own benefit or our own glorification, or are we doing it for the glorification of God? When we look at our first reading from Genesis, we see this rather strange encounter that Abraham has with the Lord. But the Lord does not appear to him in the way that he had actually appeared to him earlier. He appeared to him not as a smoking fire pot or a flaming brand, but as three guys. He came in the guise of three men standing outside of Abraham's tent. Even the way that this is told is very puzzling, right? And that the references to the Lord are puzzling because he goes back and forth, the narrator goes back and forth between a singular and a plural reference to God. They and he and, all of that, right? Goes back and forth. It leaves you scratching your head wondering, well, are they one or are they three? Of course, we know that this is actually the Blessed Trinity hinting at itself already in this 18th chapter of Genesis. Okay. The answer to the question, is he one or is he three, of course, is yes. Right? So God is confounding. We're not going to We're not going to wrap our heads around God. We're not going to stick him into the pigeonhole that we would like to put him in. We can't put him in a category the way we would like. We can't fully grasp him. So there's this aspect of mysteriousness about God. And now Abraham, he, seeing these three men, he doesn't realize that they're the Lord. And so he runs out and he says, "Sirs, please, sit under my tree. Let me attend to you." And so he rolls out this very opulent display of hospitality. Now, this was not unusual in the ancient Near East. Okay, so amongst those ancient cultures, there was this really kind of a mandate for hospitality to strangers. And for Abraham especially, he did it for the sake of the Lord. That was his motivation. He didn't do it because it was a social convention. He was out there by himself. He didn't do it to curry favor with anyone. He didn't know these guys, and he didn't expect to see them ever again. "Let me serve you, and you can be on your way." They were obviously not from around there and weren't planning on being from around there, in his assumption. Okay, so who's he trying to please? Well, he wasn't trying to please them, because he didn't expect anything from them. He didn't expect to see them after. He wasn't trying to impress his servants, because he was their boss. He wasn't trying to please the goats, right, in his herd, because, you know. And he probably wasn't trying to impress Sarah, because after 90 years of marriage, why bother? There's no impressing her at that point anyway, most likely. So who's he trying to impress? God. He's wanting to show himself to be a generous and upright man in the sight of the Lord. He's wanting to be righteous as God is righteous. He wants to do God honor. That's the only reason. And what he does is over the top. "Quick, get 3 selahs of flour, fine flour." Where do you find fine flour in the middle of the desert? The answer is nowhere. The answer is nowhere. You take wheat and you grind it painstakingly, probably with a mortar and pestle, by hand. And how much flour? 3 selahs of flour. That amounts to about half a bushel of flour. Now, if anybody's ever baked bread, you know that's more than enough to feed 3 guys. It's probably more than enough to feed 3 dozen guys. And also, quick, fix these rolls. Quick, take this steer and prepare it. Now, again, I don't know if you've ever prepared an animal from the hoof. There's no quick about it. There's not. It takes hours. It takes hours. And then to prepare the animal, plus even the cooking of the animal, like, how do you do that quickly? You don't. You don't. And again, a steer for 3 guys, it's a lot. It's a lot of beef. So what does this indicate? It indicates that Abraham is willing to spare no expense. He is not stingy with the amount, and he is willing to spend as much time as is necessary. Right? So he is all into this for the sake of these men. And then he waits on them on top of it. Not only does he get all this together and serve it to them, but then he waits on them hand and foot. And this pleases the Lord, so much so that he once again renews this promise and gives a timetable. "Next year, when I come by, you will have a son." Sarah, specifically, will have a son. So he is pleased and rewards because of this overabundance of generosity for the sake of the name of God. There's that. Now you have Martha and Mary. And according to St. Gregory the Great, again, he was Pope right around the year 600, you know, 10 years on either, you know, 5 years on either side of that, give or take. He said that Martha and Mary are symbolic of the two aspects of Christian life, the contemplative life and the apostolic life or the active life. And he says, in line with this particular story, that the better part, as Jesus himself says, is the contemplative life. So in other words, the life of prayer, attending to God, glorifying him, that is the higher form of life. The active life, doing things in the world for the sake of God, concrete things, while good, are not quite at the same level of the contemplative life. Now, why would that be? Gregory goes on, again, it's not to say that people are better or worse than others, but the form of the life is higher because, Gregory says, one of those forms of life is eternal and the other is not. So that eternal form of life, the contemplative life, is the life of heaven, whereas the active life is not. Think this through. It makes perfect sense. When we work, when we do things, we set about a task, what are we trying to do? We are trying to effect a positive change. We are trying to bring something into existence that does not yet exist. We are trying to improve upon something. That is what work is about. It's moving something. Even the literal, in terms of physics, the definition of work is being able to move something. So, when you're in heaven, what needs to be moved? What needs to be improved? What needs to be brought into existence that is not already in existence? And the answer, of course, is nothing. Nothing. So there is no work in heaven. There is only the contemplation of God. That's what lasts forever. So, as I've said before, maybe, if you find the life of prayer and contemplation and meditating on the glories of God boring, then you're probably going to find heaven boring. But good news is, we won't have that veil between our eyes and the Lord that veils the fullness of his majesty. We will not have that blindness about us, but rather we will see him for who he is, St. Paul tells us. And that will be the most glorious thing we will have ever experienced and will ever experience. So that's what Gregory says to us, right? That form of life is higher because that is what endures, the life of prayer. And that's why he praises Mary while gently rebuking Martha. Now, why does he do that rebuke for Martha? Because work is bad? No, of course not. Of course not. But rather, he is saying, you are anxious and worried about many things. There's need of only one thing. And of course, he's referring to himself. Myself and my words, Jesus says, are the one thing that you need. The one thing that you need. The one thing that you ought to concentrate on and focus on. Now, when Jesus showed up at their door there in Bethany, Martha's first instinct was to jump into action, and that was good. She wanted to extend this hospitality to Jesus and his disciples when he came to the door. She wanted to, with the very same attitude as Abraham toward the Blessed Trinity, be generous, generous with her effort, generous with her holdings, generous with her time. She wanted to do that, and she was not thinking about, boy, how much work is this going to be? She dove in for the sake of Jesus. But then, somehow, somewhere along the line, she lost track of why she was doing it. She forgot, and she began to look at other things. Think about this. What now is she concentrating on when she comes to Jesus and makes her complaint? What is she concentrating on, or who is she concentrating on when she makes this complaint? She says, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me by myself to do the serving? So somehow along the line, the object of her intention has become herself. She's recognized that it is all on her shoulders, and it is burdensome, but she is beginning to let it become about her. And then also, she tends toward resentment toward her sister, who is listening attentively to Jesus. And she's seeing her not work and herself working, and feels that it is unjust. So the concentration is really on herself, and in this resentful and envious way, looking to her neighbor, her sister. And it poisons everything for her. So she loses track of why she is doing it in the first place, to love Jesus. She's lost track of the love of Jesus. And so he doesn't rebuke her for doing the work. He rebukes her for being forgetful as to why she did it to begin with. And folks, I think that's the thing that we all ought to ponder, right? That's the thing that we really all ought to be mindful of, is what we began in goodness of intention and purity of heart and taking on this quest of Christian discipleship. We ought to always keep in the forefront why we did it in the first place for him. Why we embrace the call of our baptism for him. Why we seek to win other disciples to the Lord for him. Why we do any of this for him. I've heard people say occasionally, and I don't necessarily doubt the goodness of their intention, but they say, well, I come to Mass here or there or yonder or whatever because I get something out of it. Or I don't go to Mass anymore because I don't get anything out of it. Well, so who are you doing that for again? Sounds like yourself. We come to glorify God. We come to glorify God. And then it is he who builds us up from within with his grace and his peace and his joy. But we, you know, we can't be forgetful. We can't be forgetful of him. Martha is doing a good thing. And she starts doing it for the Lord, and he reminds her, though, that she has forgotten. And so we're all exhorted to be more like both of them, right? Two great saints of, I would say, the dignity of work or the theology of work would be St. Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei, and John Paul II. John Paul, of course, wrote in several encyclicals about the dignity of labor and the dignity of work and how it can be, how it can glorify God if we do so properly. And, of course, Jose Maria Escrivá, in founding the Opus Dei movement, really wanted people to see that their everyday work was a way of serving God and growing close to him and glorifying him. The devil wants to convince us that it is right and proper to do your service to God, but then to do everything else, you know, just kind of whatever, or that they're not related, or that this work that you do, this life that you live, this call that you have been called to, this vocation of yours, the ordinary stuff of that doesn't have anything to do with God. He loves to divide these things in our lives and cut our lives in two, so then he can start lopping pieces of it off until finally there is basically none of our lives that have anything to do with God. But rather, God is reminding us that everything has to do with him and can glorify him. Now, mind you, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, if somebody is their profession is human trafficking, like, okay, there's no glorifying that. There's no dignifying that, right? That's sinful, right? You can't take a sinful thing as a profession and glorify God with it, right? But all of those things that we do, you know, whether we're changing diapers or we're, you know, doctors or whether we're farmers or whether we're housewives or whether we're, you know, whatever you're doing, wherever you are, maybe you're somebody who's a caregiver for somebody that is either convalescent or or is unable to care for themselves anymore. Maybe you're that person that is unable to care for themselves. All of us can dignify the Lord in how we do that work. How we do that work. I think that's something that's very challenging oftentimes for people that that are older or that are homebound or you know, not mobile anymore or what have you. Like, they don't know what they're there for. Maybe they're there, as St. Paul says, to make up for what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ. You know, maybe they're there to glorify the Lord in the hard work of suffering in trust with Him. And then all of us, you know, in all the things that we are called to do, can glorify the Lord. But I think what we ought to do whenever we begin and end any task is to envision the Lord in front of us and say to Him, I do this for you. It could be the simplest and silliest of things. It could be the grandest and greatest of things. But in all things, we seek to glorify Him. And in that way, then, we won't fall into the trap of Martha, the trap that she fell into, right, of being anxious about how much there is to do or who's doing it and who's not doing it. We simply do it. We simply do it, and we do it for the love of the Lord, and He receives it with joy. He receives it with pride in us. And in that way, we can renew the world. In that way, we can renew the world. So we do what we do, not for ourselves, not for the sake of the reputation that we might have amongst others, not for the sake of, you know, even patting ourselves on the back for how good we're doing, and not letting ourselves become resentful toward others for not doing what they are called to do. But in this way, that, like, the Lord can free us, if we keep our gaze fixed on Him, He can free us from the anxieties about all these other things that are really side issues, and so that we can see the one thing.